the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez. And before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here to my right, joining us today is Brandon Burnside.
Hello.
Next to him is Scott Gershon.
Hi, Mike.
Next to him is Forrest Robinson.
Hello, Mike.
And next to him, actually not really next, but next on the list, Rob Arbiter.
Hello, Mike.
And sitting between Rob and Forrest is our good friend Martin Uchik.
All right, Martin.
Yay.
So around the square table, right?
Well, it's kind of round. There's
rounded edges.
It's rounded edges. It's round on the edges for sure. Yeah, you're right.
That's why we all.
Yeah, you're right.
This is the Audio Nowcast podcast where a bunch of guys from the audio industry get together and talk about the industry. And we talk about gear. We talk about
gear.
Love.
Gear. And more gear. But we also talk about different things that affect the audio industry.
And how many times have we done this now?
This is show number 73.
Wow.
I remember back at show one.
You know, I don't. That's a long time ago.
You know what?
Show two for me.
I had more hair then.
It's painful. Show one is painful.
Is it?
It's painful. You could tell we were all new.
Wow. And now we're old.
But Martin, thank you for joining us. Martin is from, well, why don't you introduce yourself and just tell everybody where you are from.
Oh, well, my accent is from Germany. That's what everybody asks first. And I work for a company here in West Hollywood called Plus 24. And we're the distributor for Sanken microphones and Brainstorm and some other gadgets.
Yay!
Sorry.
A lot of cool toys.
A lot of cool toys. A lot of cool microphones, that's for sure.
Yay! Sanken mic.
Yay!
And Martin's been with us before, but we'd have to go back and figure out exactly what podcast number
that was. See, really what it is Martin's our dealer. Yeah. He comes in, we need our fix.
He's an enabler. Definitely an enabler.
Well, today, I'm glad Martin's here because one of the things we're going to talk about is the economics of gear. And basically, that's a fancy way of, as Rob put it, justifying your gear.
Yeah.
Which I like. But before we get to the economics of gear, let's talk a little bit about some of the stuff that's in the audio news. And one thing is, I don't know if you guys have heard, but, you know, ASCAP and BMI, basically the licensing, the publishing for songwriters, they want to start collecting royalties off of the digital music, and specifically things like iTunes previews.
Like the 30-second previews.
Exactly, and downloads and things of that nature. And, you know, we all work in music, and we all, you know, I know Brandon has licensed music, and I know Rob works with publishing and things like that. I mean, what do you guys think about that? To me, that just seems just a little over the top.
Bad idea.
Not over the top.
Bad idea.
Well, I mean, how much of it? Sense. How much is going to trickle back to the songwriters?
Yeah, well, you know, pennies.
And who pays for that?
Well, essentially, it's going to be the consumer.
Trickle down to the
you
consumer.
You guys said it with a Marlon Brando accent. You know, I want a piece of your money.
No kidding.
But I don't know. I kind of read that, and you know, I'm pro songwriter, especially when you got guys like, you know, Martin, right, who is a songwriter, Martin Page, that is. Although Martin, you may be a songwriter too.
Every Martin is a songwriter.
That's right. But I don't know. I just think that's definitely not something that's going to encourage people to listen to new music and.
Well, it depends who's paying for it. If this were to go through and they raise the price. You know, at iTunes and other stores, then it's going to hurt everything.
Which it is, because, you know, Apple's not going to – they're not going to pay
They're not going to take less.
But it's kind of like a restaurant that pays a flat fee for playing music over. You know, anyone who's playing music for entertainment value of any form, radios, restaurants, clubs, there is a ASCAP fee that they pay automatically, mm-hmm, that goes, yeah, into the kitty. So I guess the question becomes, is there any rights to be had by broadcast music over the internet? And the question is, how do you define broadcast? Is it a quote-unquote radio format, or is it something where you can just sit there and all day long listen to pieces of music and be entertained? You know, I think that there is – I understand the concept, and I understand what they're trying to do. I think in this age where people are trying to figure out how to make money in this new business.
Right.
I think everyone's trying everything.
But you know what's kind of crazy about this though is that they, you know, they're lobbying Congress to try to make music retailers that sell, you know, downloads to pay a performance fee. And it's not really a performance fee.
No.
You know, and when you like CNET had an article, a bunch of different people had an article, but CNET, and we'll link to that. We'll link to the CNET one. But essentially, you know, they're talking the person in charge, and I forgot his name, and if I look it up on the internet right now, I can tell you. But basically what he was saying is that, you know, with the downloads of music and with the downloads of movies, because it's not just
But why shouldn't if somebody's going to be entertained by an intellectual property that someone created,
right?
Why shouldn't there be money involved?
No, there is money involved. The money is you're buying the music. That's the money involved. The money is if you're the artist, you get paid for the music. But why should you be paying performance fees? Why should you be paying publishing royalties?
For somebody to spin your record or to play your song.
You should absolutely, because you're getting that off the sale anyhow.
But one's mechanical and one is intellectual.
Right.
So it's saying that when...
But it's not a performance. You're downloading it.
The question is, when you buy a CD, you take it home, you're not broadcasting it. But when you've got a broadcast medium, instead of being the radio, it's your computer, and you're now going to broadcast music across, isn't that fall under performance?
No.
It's mechanical?
How is that broadcasted?
Are we talking about 30-second previews now, or are we talking about false?
We're talking about previews, and we're also but they also want to ding you for downloads.
For downloads,
not just the
previews. Well, you say ding you. I mean, if they raise the price of the product, I mean, I'm all for the songwriter getting a bigger chunk. If they raise the price of the product because of it and it hurts music sales, then it's a bad thing. If they can figure out a way to not have to raise the price, if Apple can pay a blanket, license fee to ASCAP and BMI for their previews, and they're willing to eat that and not have to lose, not have to raise their price, then it's a winning thing for the songwriters.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that.
I mean, they're looking at a lot of the concept of commerce of subscription intellectual properties. And a lot of times, whether you buy a phone or you buy an iPod, what they're starting to do is, theoretically, you can download this music for free.
Right.
What you didn't realize is when you bought the device, you actually paid a licensing fee.
Right.
Like, one of the things that people don't realize in the video game side, they keep going, why isn't the 5.1 DVD remote? If you want 5.1, why is it separate? Why doesn't it come with the Xbox? When you buy the remote, you're not buying a remote. You're paying for the license.
Right.
So Microsoft said, I'm not going to pay the Dolby license for every Xbox ever sold. If you want 5.1, you buy the remote, you pay the Dolby license. Otherwise, Dolby doesn't get paid. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting concept, how to charge certain times and sometimes charge not. I think I totally got off track here.
No,
well, but you know what? The TV networks pay a flat fee to ASCAP and BMI each year,
right.
and then all of the royalties for everything that gets broadcast is taken from that. And that could be set up the same way for iTunes and the other music stores. The question is, who's going to eat that expense?
Well, right? It's going to be us. And here's the thing: you already pay mechanical.
It's always you.
The mechanical is already when you they get the royalties, the mechanical royalties when you buy your
when
download.
You buy it, but not when it's previewed.
Not when it's previewed. And they also, but see, they want to slap on. They want to double dip. They want to do not only the mechanicals, but then they want to do a performance. They want to do a performance fee for the download, and it's not a performance. And they want to ding you on the 30-second preview,
preview. It's not cool, especially for the better part of the last 15 or 20 years. It's rare to get a real record. Like, I don't remember the last time I got a real record since, like, Kate Bush, Hounds of Love. That was, 1985, something like that.
Right.
I did like the Frau Frau Details record, but it's rare, and, you know, they're from a different country, too, so creatively there seems to be more freedom from that. But if I'm not going to go to iTunes and say, oh, I'm just going to buy this record because I heard one song that I might think was okay. And I'm going to preview the songs before I buy them. A lot of people are going to do that. Dude, it's not cool for them to go and try to get more money just because you're trying to check out.
But they're not talking about charging the listener to preview. They're talking about...
No, they're talking about collecting royalties on that preview.
I hear
which
that.
Which essentially...
It's a flat fee for the...
But you know what? It's going to filter down. And you know what? Does. Besides even that, it's just a principle.
But you know what else, though? It can't be that huge of an amount. If you think about it on television...
I agree.
Television, the royalty is based on how many ears you're hitting in a lot of ways. And with these previews, you're hitting one set of ears at a time. And so the individual ding for downloading for one 30-second preview of a song, it's got to be minuscule.
Well, I'm sure it's not going to be a lot, but the fact of the matter is if it's anything, I just think it's wrong.
Right, it's the principle of it. Absolutely.
The perception, that's not going to make people buy more music. It's going to actually probably make people pissed off, and they're going to still
know it. It'll be masked. I agree with Rob.
I'm not sure we're all in agreement on this.
No, which is good.
Because
you guys are wrong, but that's good.
Right. I mean, you have to think about the consumer, because we've got a couple generations here of people who came up after Napster, after all these, you know, BitTorrent.
Right.
They're getting everything for free. They expect it for free.
Right.
Yeah, they can pay for it or then go get it for free. Why not get it for free? So you got to take that into consideration and go, okay, our music, you know, record sales, whatever, MP3 downloads is a loss leader. Basically give that away. We've seen bands like Radiohead do it and a few other bands.
Right.
Give your music away for a, you know, let the consumer choose the cost. You make your money on licensing, concert ticket sales, and merch.
But see, that's the thing. That's taking the artist into consideration. The artist has been coming up shortchanged for at least as long as I can remember. I love how the music industry has, like, gone and basically brainwashed people and thinking, oh, you know, the artist is getting ripped off because of the illegal downloading. Man, you got to be kidding me. The artist has been getting ripped off, but I can guarantee you it has not necessarily been just from the general public who's been downloading. They go and do this music for these record companies. They're already not seeing what they should be seeing for their own music.
But let me ask this. Using Martin Page as a perfect example.
Right.
Two different people get paid two different ways. If you sell a lot of albums,
right.
Martin's not necessarily getting money because the band sold a lot of albums, per se. It's their album. But Martin's a writer, so Martin will get money from ASCAP on the stuff that he sells, but not necessarily from the sale of the disc. So if the writer is separate from the artist, it's in the writer's best interest to have representation via ASCAP and BMI.
No. I'm all for representation. I like ASCAP. I like BMI. I am all for that. You know what? I like the performance fees they should absolutely get, especially, you know, radio and nightclubs and restaurants and things like that, by all means.
But that's
I'm just saying in this particular instance, I think it's wrong. I think it's you're double dipping and it's not a performance. It's not. When I buy a song from iTunes, it's not performing on the way down, you know,
but the preview is a performance.
But the preview, that's what I'm saying. The preview is not even a full performance.
Right,
you know?
But you get paid for an incomplete performance on television.
But
or
here's the,
radio. The
thing. So if you're going to get dinged from that, why not just take away the
trailers, commercials. I mean, it's all performance.
All your deals are made before it even hits the internet. That's what you do. You make the deals. Like when Brandon writes a song for a trailer, his deal is made before that trailer is even
released. But my guess is the performance royalty of a preview will probably not be a one-to-one as it is.
You know what I'm going to recommend? I've never recommended this before. I think we need to have someone on who knows what the hell they're talking about in this topic, because I got news for you. I mean, I think I know how all this stuff works because I've been living it for 20 years with ASCAP and with having music licensed for trailers and songs licensed for television and film and all these different aspects. And I think we should get someone in
That's a great idea. I'm going to do a little bit of
homework. Part of this whole problem is that there's a lot of confusion out there and people don't realize how all this stuff works. And it's actually not all that complicated when it's explained right. But, you know, the way the Harry Fox agency has worked for years and the way mechanicals work versus
aren't we doing the Glenn Beck audio version of this? you know.
Kind of. Well,
it doesn't have to be real.
None of us are having a mental breakdown.
And besides, you know what? If we can get somebody from them, it's just going to be so much more satisfying to tell a real person that they're wrong.
Okay, so let's.
I'm just kidding.
In that spirit, let's go to our favorite conversation, and that is gear.
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 We will go to gear, but to wrap up with.
I was giving you that answer, but no,
I think Rob's right though. I think we will definitely do a show with on ASCAP and BMI and licensing in general, because that's, you know, because we're thinking about media the way it is right now. Who knows the way media is going to be?
Because honestly, we need a bit of an education here, because for a while there it was a table full of music writers sitting around arguing that it's not fair to get royalties. And that just, there's something wrong when that's the way the argument is turned. So obviously anybody who writes music wants to get as much as they can.
Sure.
So we will continue the conversation later.
That was funny.
It's what you're arguing.
Hey, Rob.
Everyone up in arms. I write music, and how dare they want to give me a royalty?
I want to make less money, damn it.
Yeah. You know what? But my argument was for the perception, though. I just don't want anything that's going to hurt. And if you look at
it ain't going to hurt.
Listen, if you look at the websites and just do that, just Google, you know, royalties for previews, you're just going to see website after website after website with people saying, you know, F the, you know, music industry.
Well, because everybody wants
this.
It for free right now, and the moment they have to pay for it, no matter how little it is, they whine about it.
You are right. You are so right about that.
At the end of the day, you come out of school and you make a living. You can be a plumber. You can be an electrician. You could be a songwriter. At the end of the day, it's fair for these people that are to be honest, more talented than anybody you know, are better than everybody you know, and you're now saying, I think you're the most talented guy. Oh my, I'm a fan of yours, but I don't want to pay you.
Right.
But entertain me. Because what it means is come in, mix for free, because why the f*** not? Sorry.
But you know what? It's not that simple, Scott, because it's not like people don't want people to pay for their music. I'll pay for my music every day, all the time. It's just...
I disagree. I think people want things for free. It's just that simple. They don't want to have to deal with it.
But you know what? The amount of a performance royalty to reach one pair of ears for a download, it has to be an incredibly tiny amount.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And if it can funnel, you know, a few pennies to the songwriter.
That's what I'm saying.
As long as it goes to the songwriter.
Which it would have to.
Exactly.
That's what ASCAP and BMI fight for.
This is a business. We wake up, people try to offer a service, like any other service in the business, and for that service, they get money. They get paid. Why is it that it's a shock when, oh my God, they're making money?
No,
why should I want to pay them?
No, but no.
Because they're entertaining you.
Know what? You know what? For something we agreed to talk about later, we're still talking about it.
Hey, wait, really quick, apparently.
Come on, give me a chair. We got to
throw No, this is good. But since we're going to wrap this up, we're going to let somebody have the last word. Martin, what do you think from just what you've heard on what we've been talking about?
I was just thinking, you know, when you guys go in a music store and demo gear, you should, like, you know, pay a fee for that.
That's a good point.
The trickle down to the music instrument manufacturers. Yeah.
That's right. Can I demo that microphone?
I will admit that I have this whole thing of getting BMI and ASCAP confused, sort of involuntarily with like that, the record companies. I'm still so mad at the record companies ripping off the artists. But anytime I hear like the artist isn't getting something, it's like I'm, you know.
I understand.
Yeah, anyway.
But generally, BMI, ASCAP, they're good guys.
They're fighting like for the artists.
No, they're fighting for the artists.
I will.
Hey, I get my 5 cent check every couple months. It's great.
So is that it? Do you think is that your only opinion, Martin?
Yeah, I'm not involved in that part of the business.
You're lucky, and we are happy for you.
But
as a consumer, I would say, you know, I wouldn't want to pay directly or indirectly for sampling something if I want to buy it or not.
Right.
I mean, if I go in a store and look at clothes or whatever, you know, I pay for it when I really buy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we all create music, but. Or consumers.
But you know what? When you go into the store and try on that shirt that you might want to buy, that store has to stock the inventory and pay to keep the stuff there. So we're not talking about the consumer paying for this. We're talking about the store paying for it. And if Apple and all the other online stores had to have a blanket license with ASCAP or BMI for you to enable the previews, it doesn't get passed on to the customer. It's a fee that the store has to pay.
Doing business.
It's a cost of doing business. And if they decide they're going to raise their price a few cents a song and it kills their business, then that was a stupid decision on their part.
Indeed.
They're making money hand over fist right now, and they can afford.
They can definitely afford it.
They can afford that little bit of inventory, and that's the equivalent to a hardware store.
Gear!
And I'm going to give Rob the last word on that.
Well,
hey, but you know what?
We'll pick this up later.
Speaking about, you know.
Gear?
Yeah, we're going to talk about gear, but, you know, paying for the previews. That's. The music store. When you go to the music store, I know people who, like, buy gear all the time, use it, and then just return it. You know? And
that's called rental.
That's exactly. That's
you but, pay for that, too.
Well.
You do, big time.
15%.
You do. You pay to rent it to try it out, and if you don't like it. And it's less.
No, but I'm talking about from regular stores, from like Guitar Center,
right,
with their return policy.
Oh, buy it, play it.
And it just makes the prices go up
illegal.
For everyone.
Too many, there.
But you see people doing that
I know a couple. I know like maybe two musicians who've done that.
All the time.
And I don't see how they do
it. It's one of the reasons that a lot of electronics stores, if you buy a camera and return it, there's a restocking fee.
Yeah, 15%.
People were buying cameras, making student films, and then returning them.
Yeah.
They still are. But at least now you know I'm paying a 15% rental or restocking fee.
Right. People are cheap, aren't they?
You think?
So what's your favorite plugin?
Hey, well, let's change it. We'll talk about that. But one of the things I want to talk to you guys about is I wanted to talk about the economics of gear in general. It seems like now's a good time to kind of reevaluate a lot of the decision making process in buying gear. Because I know a lot of guys that are thinking about upgrading their studio. I'm thinking about upgrading my studio. So there's a lot of different directions, and I have a couple friends who are on Pro Tools or getting off Pro Tools, and I have some other friends that want to get into Pro Tools and just gear in general. It seems like it's a real big transition, especially as we go into the economy and people are starting to think, okay, things could be getting better in the next year or so. So let's start, buying some gear. And I wanted to open this up with you guys, and before we even get into the actual buying of gear, let's talk a little bit about the music industry. And one thing that you hear a lot of buzz about is the fact that DigiDesign is not going to AES this year. They're not going to have a booth there. Usually AES is like one of their bigger shows where they roll out, you know.
Is it?
Yeah, usually. You see a lot of people.
I'm going to put my business hat. By going to AES, how many more units do they sell as if they didn't go? Business 101.
Well, it's just a market perception.
They don't want to be seen as struggling.
Well,
the question is, what is the relevance of AES compared to what it used to be?
If not being there hurts your reputation, then you should be there. But I guess their reputation is big enough.
I mean, it's like Microsoft, you know, Windows, everyone uses it.
Well, all I know is the perception is, you know, that's where you go buy the big boy toys. That's where you go try out the big boy. That's where at one time where you could get actually hands-on and you can say, okay, let's look at DigiDesign. Let's see what let's see what Euphonics has, you know, with their Nuendo tie-in. And let's do this. I mean, it was just a place where the big boys. You see a lot of – I've worked a couple AES shows with API in their booth, and you see a lot of studio – owners, you see a lot of educational institutions, a lot of universities come over because they're going to, you know, buy gear for their, you know, recording program. So it's just a place where the big boys buy the big toys.
Right, but I think right now in our climate, one of the things that, because I've been a little bit close to this,
right,
and with Digi and companies that sell, say, Pro Audio, what's happened is that a lot of the big businesses. You know, we bought $2 million in Pro Tools. Warner Brothers bought $2 million in Pro Tools. Universal did. We all did this over the last several years. Guess what we're not doing right now? We already have them.
Right.
We're not buying them. So we've already bought it. So we've stopped buying it. So all the big businesses have 90%. We're still buying 10%. But the big deals aren't happening. So you've got that. Then what happens if you look at DigiDesign – is you look at the other market it's in, consumer. Well, disposable money for the common day person who would buy Pro Tools, who's in college and wants to do a band and all that, money's getting a little tight. So now with the big business to businesses pulling back and the people with disposable money buying LEs and all that stuff pulling back just a little bit because the economy's down a little bit, who wants to spend money, all of a sudden they're hurting. So when you look then at a company that has to investigate its cost, where does it spend? Where does it cut back? You don't want to cut back in R&D. Guess where you're cutting back? You know, if you say, pick one, AES or NAMM show. NAMM show is a buying show.
Right.
Guess what you're going to pick? AES. AES and AES in New York? Nothing, I mean, I love AES, but it's not the biggest show out there. You want to be at NAB. You want to be over at NAMM. And AES, I think the relevance of AES in today's economic hardship is not as important if you've got to make hard choices.
Well, that and the fact that they also, you know, laid off a lot of their people in the R&D department, you know? I mean, they've trimmed their staff quite a bit. So it's, I don't know.
Do you really want Pro Tools 9 coming out? All new hardware? And you want to spend, I mean, because what you're saying is you want to buy all new hardware and all new Icon, and you want to go out and outlay another $13,000 to $100,000 because that's how they make money.
Ooh,
they're not making it on that $300 update.
Right.
And you want LE, they sell cards. Software, I think what's interesting is what Apple's done. Hey, Logic, $400. Digi's like, oh crap, got to be able to meet it to compete. All of a sudden, they're not playing in the $1,000, $2,000 market. They're playing in the $400 market, and they got to do R&D for synths that come into it. Now, all of a sudden, they're going, how do we make money? The churches are making money. It's a big, big business. Churches are spending big bucks, live entertainment. But when you start looking at the economics of our business, and, you know, it's very important because what I tell all my vendors, the people that I consult with who are manufacturers, you have to look at who you're selling to and understand what their businesses are going through.
Right.
Because you could sit there and say, you know, we're going to charge $2,000 for this piece of hardware. I'm going, good luck. It's not going to sell because who's going to buy it?
Right.
You look at who you're selling to. I look at my clients who have the video games and movies and have to understand their dynamics. They have to understand ours.
But here's the thing with DigiDesign is, you know, and you see it in the computer industry, being in hardware is kind of it's a bad business to be in, only because if you look at the history.
Software is worse. It's pirating.
If you look at the, we'll talk about that in a second, but if you look at the history of hardware companies, going back to even before, like, look at SGI and look at some of those big computers where they had big expensive hardware. And as processing got faster and as things got faster, they became more irrelevant. You look at DigiDesign, you know, they had their TDM cards, but as computers started getting faster and the little guys are making, you know, these programs, and you see like Ableton Live and you see like Logic and you see like, you know, Cubase and all these other software manufacturers that are taking advantage of the, you know, onboard processing power of computers, you know, no wonder Digi's having a hard time. But see, Digi could have owned, hold on one second, Digi could have owned the market because Digi, they did a smart thing, and I think they really, squandered it. And, you know, they bought Wazoo, and I don't know if you're familiar. I know Rob's familiar with the developers. Those guys were probably, at their finest, were probably the best soft synth developer out there. They came up with some really great stuff.
Absolutely.
And it sounded great, it worked great, and it was really good. Digi bought them. And instead of trying to stay ahead of the market and seeing, hey, look, we could get into software because – seeing where things were going, you know, that kind of a lot of those
Gibson
guys.
Gibson with Opcode and
Harman
Kardon with everybody.
Right. But come on, DigiDesign, you know, the fact that they charge you an arm and a leg just to get time code and just to get 128 tracks. I think that's what ticks off a lot of people. And I'm not here trying to bash Digi because I use it every day. I make my living on it. I just can see where people could find some, have a problem with DigiDesign and the fact that you have to pay this, you know, absorbent amount of money.
Yes and no. Let me counter this. You're in the generation that you want more for less. Why? Because before Digi, you had to buy an SSL console, you had to buy a Studer machine, you had to buy SR racks, you had to spend $1 million. I'm sorry, now they cost you $12,000. I mean, how many companies have gone out of business one by one that Digi's taken out? Every tape machine, Atari, Studer, they're gone. Tape is gone. Ampex is gone. All of these companies, you can actually equate it to what Digi's done. Every major console company almost is going or gone. They're now making little modules, the input-output modules. So that's what Digi did to a market. Now we're complaining that, oh my God, you got $1 million for $12,000, now you want it for $300,000.
And you know what? There's still a giant difference in the kind of projects you can do on a big Pro Tool system versus a little Pro Tool system.
I understand.
And that line is still not going to be blurred for a long time.
Listen, I think there's – I'm not saying that they shouldn't – there shouldn't be an icon. There shouldn't be D command. I'm just saying that they could have definitely not – they're under attack. There's a lot of software out there. There's a lot of people that are jumping ship, you know.
But you know what? They were probably too big and too bloated, and they probably needed to trim down and –
But see, that's good because I think they need competition.
Well, absolutely. You know what? There's definitely a comeuppance, you know, that's happening with them is, you know, what goes around comes around. And the funny thing is you mentioned analog, desks, you know, the competition was great for analog because it kind of helped reinvent themselves. But there's some companies out there that are doing extremely well doing analog desk, and one of them is API. You know, the 1608s are just genius boards. They're gorgeous. They sound great. And, you know, and especially when the economy is a little tight, when people are going to spend $40,000, $50,000 for a piece of gear, you know, it helps that it, you know, can pass audio through it.
Right, but API was never one of the great mixing console manufacturers compared to all the other big ones. They went out of business. Neve? I mean,
API
Neve
was huge.
What, SSL is bought by what? Neve is owned by a school, SAE, and
SSL's Peter Gabriel.
In other words, this is like Sinclair company time.
Right.
I mean, it's holding on. I mean, these companies aren't vibrant. I mean, are you going to want to buy stock in these companies because they're making money hand over fist? No. They're boutique little companies. Say it's API.
Companies. But they're doing well, and I think they're going to do well for a long time. And the ones that are sticking around with the right product, they're always going to do well.
I think it is brilliant, though, how the analog companies have reinvented themselves.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's cool.
That is cool. That's real cool.
See, that's for us, it's great.
And I'll tell you one good thing about the analog is the 500 series, 500 modules. The standardization, the fact that API opened that up to the analog world was just a genius move for analog in general because it really it gave them their plug-in and it gave them glue that all the analog companies can kind of stand behind. But I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to stop talking about Digi. Probably not. But we're going to talk a little bit about the economics of gear and hopefully shed some advice and hear some stories on how we've all spent way too much money on gear. We'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, me and Scott were arguing Digi Design. I think it's going out of business. Scott saying, no, it's going to rule the world.
Wait a minute.
No, just kidding. No, we got that. We started down that road basically because we wanted to see if Digi not being at AES was a good thing or a bad thing. And I don't think we came to a consensus.
Because I don't really think it matters that much.
I don't think it matters. I don't think Digi's going to lose sales from it.
All right. So let's keep
going. But it brings up good Actually, it is the best publicity they've ever had. Because what are we talking about?
Digi Design.
Thank you.
Yeah. And they're still they're still the big boy on the block, you know. And you can definitely...
For the foreseeable future.
Yeah. But I wanted to talk a little bit about just the economics of gear. I had gotten a really good conversation with Forrest prior to the podcast, actually, and we started talking about gear and about when to buy gear, and I was telling him about
as often as possible.
No, I was just telling him about my own, you know, my philosophy and how I buy my gear and how I use, you know, I have this thing. It's called like a wave. If you can picture a wave, like a sine wave, and you can be on the front of the wave or you can be in the back of the wave. And that's where those are, there's like two sweet spots to buy gear.
But you talk about the razor blades along the way.
No, I'm just talking about it making sense financially for me. So like, for instance, if I want to be on the front of technology on a buying wave, you know, I buy a new MacBook Pro when it comes out and I buy the fastest that's out there with the most RAM because I'm going to be on the front edge of technology. And when I buy it, I know I can make my money back because I'll immediately be able to use projects that I can utilize the extra processing power and the extra RAM. And sure enough, you know, within a couple of weeks, my MacBook Pro has paid off because I was able to do stuff that had I not had this, it would have taken longer and it would have been a little bit more of a hassle on my other laptop.
But don't you think, though, you know, like Mac has the two prices, the super-duper most expensive one, and then $1,000 less is the one that's just a little bit slower?
Right. But
you can buy two of those.
But in my application, it was only $300. And it was worth that $300 for me to bump up to the one that I needed. Then the other time I was telling him was sometimes if I don't want to be on the cutting edge of gear, of technology, I go on the backside where I'm like a generation back.
Yeah.
So you're getting a good bang for the buck.
Yeah.
It may not be the latest and greatest, but the usability is still there and you can make money or whatever you need to do. And you're not under that economic pressure. So you're also getting a better deal, with the laptop or with whatever you get. And I just wanted to, you know, we started talking about that and I wanted to open it up with you guys. And how you buy your gear and how the economics. Are you guys on the front end? Are you on the back end? Do you think it applies to software? Do you upgrade your software all the time? Do you wait two or three versions before you upgrade your software? Rob, let's start with you. Gear. Do you tend to be on the front or the back side?
Wait. Rob, I can answer this. Yes. Whatever you just say yes.
I actually, because I try to stay on top of so many different kinds of hardware and software,
right?
And it's never ending.
He is the edge.
I'm the edge. No, what I try to do, what I find I do, because I have so many computers and so many different systems, I'm trying to keep going all the time. I'll generally try to leap on the front edge, get the latest, greatest. You know, if it's not a Mac, if it's PC-based stuff, I'll build my own machines out of the coolest components. If it's a Mac, I'll try to get the coolest ones. But then I tend to, once I have the gear, I tend to use it like into the ground until it's basically useless. I tend to then skip a bunch of generations. So I'll skip a few generations, but then I'll dive in all state of the art and then, you know, let a few generations go by before I buy anything else computer-wise. And the main reason for that is by the time you have a system configured and all your software installed and all the copy protection authorizations and all that, it's such an incredible hassle to have to upgrade a computer. I mean, you can waste days and days, if not weeks, reinstalling software. And I hate spending all that time when I could be making music or doing whatever, you know, and actually using the gear. So it happens, you know, I'm on the PC bandwagon, I'm on the Mac bandwagon, I'm on so many synthesizer bandwagons and plugins and soft synths and all that stuff. But I tend to do it in phases. Like, I'm about to do an upgrade, I need a bunch more Macs because I've actually used mine to the point where they're so old that they're not going to be able to run some new things I know that are coming out. So I'm going to upgrade the Macs. The PCs, I did the PCs. I generally tend to like get all new motherboards and put the fastest motherboards in the most important systems and then shuffle what were the fastest a generation ago into the less critical systems. But I did that about 6 months ago with the PCs.
Right.
And I hadn't done it with the PCs for probably 5 years.
Wow.
Before that. You know, I don't really do it until I don't have a choice. It's not that I just love running out and, you know, spending a ton of money on gear. I do it as necessary.
With the advent of plugins, it makes it complicated because two things happen. Either the plugins don't exist anymore, so the moment you upgrade, they're gone.
Right.
Yeah, which is ridiculous because they're perfectly functional and great.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
So, you know, number one. Number two, just getting the plugins, paying that out of the $150 to $75 upgrade times, you know, 100. Now you're spending thousands to get absolutely nothing.
Right.
You're getting all, you're rebuying all of the same material for something that might or might not be faster. I mean, I bought a dual eight core. I thought, yeah, this is great. I put it in there and this is great big desktop and put all the plugins in and I brought everything up to Leopard. You know, forget about Snow Leopard. And then all of a sudden, there's something happens with my USB keys. And all of a sudden, this is called the bleeding edge. So all of a sudden, I turn it on and I go, oh, that's weird. Because I got all these USB keys. My USB key, that one. It's not turning on. Reboot it again. The next one in line, not turning on. Reseat it, boom. And I'm like, wow, I must have a bad Mac. Talk to the people I bought the Mac from. We start investigating it. Oh, yeah. The A-Core, when using a D-Link USB hub with multiple iLocks, for some reason, nobody knows why, it's a known bug. Now, sequentially, will turn off the next USB port. So if you got a keyboard, if you got an iLock, it ain't turning on. You have to take it out and replug it.
I mean, luckily,
that's crazy.
It's crazy, but a USB hub at least is a cheap thing to replace.
No.
But check this out.
But in other words, the next Mac won't have it. In other words, you wanted to be the first guy with an 8-core, me. And I got it, and yeah, now I got this stupid
But there's bigger problems now because things like Snow Leopard, I have plenty of G5s that are completely wonderfully functional in my studio, and there's nothing I'd want to change about them. They work perfectly.
Right.
Snow Leopard eventually will mean that I can't use them anymore because eventually there's going to be some piece of software I need that's going to be Snow Leopard only, and I'm going to be stuck. I don't mind when that happens because I realize all these companies have to continue to innovate to stay in business. But I try to have it happen as rarely as possible.
Right.
So I'm willing to deal with it every 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, otherwise you could be spending $100,000 a year just, you know, playing catch up with this stuff.
Not getting a whole lot of anything.
Getting nothing. Getting just trying to stay current with what you can already do now.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's one of the things about analog gear is once you buy it, you've pretty much invested in a nice piece of gear that'll sound good. Actually, only sound better the farther along you get.
But that's why I like the concept, even though it's still in its infancy, of that is DSP Farms, which is basically you got your plugins outside the computer, not in the computer.
Right.
That the plugins will happen within that unit, whether, you know, there's Muse receptacle or other
receptor.
Device. Receptor, yeah.
Or the APA.
Yeah, that's already Waves. But TC's got it. And there's people that are playing with it. UAD. Was it UAD?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Has it. I think it's really interesting because how do you take something that you've bought and not turn it into a subscription that may go out?
You don't. In the digital world, it's all subscription because even those cards are going to go out eventually. You're going to get a computer that has more DSP power than that, or the interface won't work.
Yeah, so the interface of Apple changed it up on you.
Brandon, what about you? How do you buy your gear? What kind of economics do you think? I know you've done a couple.
I try to get my company to pay for it.
Which is a good move.
Smart. As much as possible. I do have to buy a lot of things at home, and it's actually an interesting thing I want to talk about. You sort of hinted on it earlier, pirating, you know, plugins and stuff. You know, sometimes, and I think it'll be an interesting conversation, sometimes you need, you know, especially if you're young, you're just getting into music production, you don't have a budget, you know, sometimes you need to, I think we all probably have at one point, and I'm not going to mention any names of anything, but you know, I don't think that's a bad thing for these companies because I think it's like trying something. You know, there's been several times where I've pirated something in the past and then I've ended up buying it.
You know, so I think it's a good, you know, it's a good, it can be a good thing.
So Brandon is pro-pirating.
No, but you know,
no, I'm just kidding. No, I think you're a valid point.
I agree.
If you have the money to buy it, you're going to buy it.
Right.
If you don't, you pirate it. When you have the money, you buy it.
I think the industry did an interesting thing. I think the industry did an interesting thing in that it used to be that that plug-in was about $1,000. Because what they did was they said, okay, you got a PCM80, it's $3,000. We're going to have a reverb plug-in, it'll be $2,000. You know, trying apples to apples. And everyone, $2,000, it ain't going to work. Now I think two things that have occurred expansion packs, which basically says, here's Pro Tools, and we come with a shitload of plug-ins. Or here's Logic, and it comes with a lot of stuff. So that's cool. Now all of a sudden, you know, there's ePure and BTX. There's some German products that I've always wanted to try, but I didn't want to buy them. They came with a pack. Now all of a sudden, I love it. I want to know more about their products, number one. Number two, a lot of the interesting plugins that are kind of obscure but weird are like $150.
Yeah.
So now it's no longer $1,000, and I'll go, if I buy a $150 plugin, and I just, what a bad decision I made. I don't feel like I've lost that much. You know, I don't feel like, oh, my God, what a bad choice. I got to eat this now. You know, you can eat it a little bit more.
Well, we also now we're in a time period when every manufacturer seems to have gotten on the trial period bandwagon where you can use something for 2 weeks or 30 days or whatever.
Which is fantastic.
And that's a really good thing. And I think that because you generally, if it's something you like, you use it up until the point when the demo runs out. At that moment, it's not like you're going to race out to figure out, okay, how can I now get a pirated copy? If it's
right.
something you've really gotten attached to over those 2 weeks during the demo and you really want it, you're going to figure out a way to buy
get it.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
But I remember it. Even the days I'll go back this far, Atari computers. We used to trade software because that's what everybody did. But it became less about trading software that you actually wanted and used day to day. And
no, it's
more
just
about,
like a competition.
It becomes it's like, oh, dude, I'll trade your library. Oh, man, look at all those discs. I'll bring my discs. And then I think about how many hours, days, years of my life I've done copying software that I never used.
Yeah. Yep. And the manuals.
Just, yeah. But it's just really cool to have it.
Right.
Because you might use it. You know.
Forrest, what about you? You know, I know you're going through right now, man.
Yeah.
There's a lot of issues. I know you're thinking about bailing on the Pro Tools bandwagon, going on Logic. And
no, do not do that.
It's the big deal.
Suddenly can I put it? Seriously, if you don't want to use Pro Tools, use Cubase. Don't use Logic. Unless
I use Logic and Pro Tools, and I like it. And I actually use.
Yeah. A lot of guys use Logic.
I'm telling you, I've got to.
I am so convinced.
The instruments.
The instruments are beautiful
that
in Logic.
Included or
it's $400. Buy both. Sorry.
Well,
you're talking about Logic and Cubase.
No, Logic's $400. I mean, come on. You know those instruments? Uses a 3-put to Pro Tools.
I'm saying. I still have the M series.
You can't even get like Omnisphere for $400.
That's true.
I mean, you got a whole program and all of their plugins for $400.
It's $500.
I missed Scott's 4 a.m. infomercial this morning, so he's giving it to me now.
Buy it.
I would have to say
I got the beard, so I kind of know that.
I can't believe you don't like Logic that much.
Rob's like, he's a PC guy.
Hey, man.
No, you know what I am? I'm a guy who bought every single sequencer under sun, read the entire manual for each one end to end, and really made it my responsibility to learn what's good and bad about each of them. Logic comes with great instruments, but it's a horribly designed sequencer and audio editor by today's standards.
Yeah.
It was okay in the beginning, but it's been band-aided to the point where the only people who would use it are people who don't know how much better the other stuff out there is. I use Logic. Well, I'm sorry, but I feel like I'm qualified
to talk
about this.
I don't have Logic, by the way. This is something I'm thinking about. Okay, go ahead.
There's one guy who's qualified. Rob is qualified.
I mean, I'm not making this stuff up. But the idea is, I mean, with
and
Logic.
Who turned you on to Cubase, by the way?
I think you may have.
I did.
A really long
You're
time
welcome.
Ago. No, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I'll send you flowers.
Okay. Will you guys hug
well,
me?
You certainly cannot beat Pro Tools for the editing.
No,
that's
but here's,
what,
here's
sure.
the thing.
As an
but, I actually do use Logic as a sound module because a lot of the plugins that come with it are great. You can run Logic. It's an inexpensive program, relatively mm-hmm. speaking, compared to what the hardware would cost
right.
you. You can run it. I actually have it on an old Mac. I had it on a G4. Now I have it on a G5 that just has some light pipe connections to Pro Tools, which is my console. But I use Logic as a sound module source. But when it comes to actually sequencing and editing audio and just being able to do different variety of projects and being able to figure out how to do something complicated, some of the stuff that Logic comes pre-built to make easy. Some of the functionality that they purposely make easy is very easy in Logic. But as Bill has said when he's been here, you know, he's a real Logic expert. As soon as you get beyond what the engineers have decided should be easy, it's the most difficult, cumbersome, confusing architecture to deal with. There's a system there called the environment window that, you know, used to be where the real geeks would get in and mess with their software configurations. In 2009, you shouldn't have to mess with that kind of architecture.
That's a very good point.
I will give you that.
And Cubase is just a much more recently designed and built elegant solution. The Numidian Pro Tools it's not as complete as Logic, but it's really, really good.
It's just Pro Tools is too expensive over and again. You know what? That's a large part of it to me. I'm tired of getting nickel and dimed by digital design.
But if you're comparing apples to
apples,
but if you compare apples to apples, I mean, you can't compare a Mac running Logic with a giant Pro Tools TDM
sure.
system.
Right.
You know, one is going to be 500 in software, and one year between hardware and software, it's dozens of thousands of dollars. You're not going to compare those two. But if you compare a small Pro Tools LE versus a Logic system,
Logic is a better value.
Logic is a better value.
I hear the conjunction coming.
Just for the number of bytes in the box. But if you're talking about compatibility with the rest of the world and with the high-end world that is using the big Pro Tools systems, and if you haven't checked out Pro Tools 8, you should check it out. It's pretty good. The MIDI in it is good. The score printing is pretty good. It's come a long way. And if you compare that, I don't know how Logic has gotten this reputation that it's either easy to use or
it's easy to use
as long as you stay within the lines.
You're 100% correct. If you stay within what they have,
cheap is not. You know what?
That's what Digi did to Wayframe and Sinclair.
When you're stuck in the middle of the night,
when it came out, but it was cheap.
But when you're stuck in the middle of the night, and a solution that cost a few hundred dollars more would let you get a project finished that Logic is now not allowing you to finish because you can't figure out how to route multiple inputs to outputs in the environment window or whatever.
Right.
That few hundred dollars.
That's something to consider.
But your time is worth something.
But it's what Final Cut did to Avid. I mean, Final Cut came in and said, it's a toy. No one uses it. The last two movies I did, high-end movies, Final Cut.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it's mature. And I do agree with you. The question is, where's Apple going to take, you know, are they going to compete head-to-head with Digi in any fronts? It's yet to be seen. Is it with Logic?
You know what? No one's using Logic as their console. I mean, plenty of places are using Pro Tools as their console.
Absolutely.
It's not apples and apples at all.
It isn't. I totally agree.
So, but if you were to actually sit down and put together, maybe they're not exactly the same price system, but put together a cheap Pro Tools, a cheap Logic system, and a few others. Yeah, there's going to be a difference in the price, but that difference compared to how much better you feel about being able to get the work done and be compatible with other people you need to interact with. I always tell people, which I maybe sound like I'm going against what I was saying earlier, but I always tell people get whatever your friends and the people you need to collaborate with have because you're going to be able to get tech support from them. You're going to be able to support each other, and you're going to be able to interchange your data with each other. Right now, the thing you have to be able to interchange with is Pro Tools. Even if you're a hip-hop producer doing everything in Logic, and I deal with a lot of producers who are using Logic, we're not going to mix the project in Logic. It has to be transferred to something else.
Right.
And in our world, it's going to be transferred to Pro Tools.
Although, I do know people are starting to mix in Logic, and I do
not
know
on a high end. Not high end. No, definitely not. I'm not even going to entertain that argument. It's not true.
Wouldn't you say, though, that
it's not true.
That if you actually look under the hood a little bit more, the two competing companies that have taken over the industry for tape machines and consoles is DigiDesign and Nuendo. Those are your two very viable choices and preference, you know, between those two. When you look at songwriting tools that are just the old style sequencer, you know, you look at Performer and you look at Logic. Mm-hmm. Now, Digi has said, hey, we'd love to get into that market, that we would like to be a songwriting tool as well. I don't think Logic has become a tape machine console. I think you can do some rudimentary things on it, but when you think about the power, and I do agree with Rob, I want an SSL console with bus compressors, I want an EVQ, I want the firepower that Pro Tools can bring or Nuendo can bring, and Logic can't stand up.
Well, yeah, it's not even close.
I'll give you that. Although I will tell you,
and they're all trying to be Ableton.
I said the dark horse is Ableton. Ableton,
yeah,
you know what? And the other dark horse that just came out is Reason with Record.
Yeah,
uh-huh. That's sick. I mean, those two programs there. Let's talk about. Well, for one thing, I know. Well, Brandon, you do all your movie trailers and things like that. I know you used to be Cubase, but now you're doing more and more Ableton.
I bounce back between the two. Yeah, Cubase and Live 8. I just switched to Live 8 today, actually.
And really quick, just so you know, Brandon did the trailer, did a remix of Nine Inch Nails for
Terminator Salvation.
Yeah. Terminator Salvation. So he has some credibility around here. Anyhow, go ahead.
then we better start listening to him.
There you go.
I think you had
fuzzy.
Logic just fell out of his socket, you know.
But I know you've been doing more and more in Ableton.
It's easy. I find in Ableton compared to Cubase, things seem to work easier. I'm using a lot of different MIDI controllers. It's just plug and play. It's so simple. Those work well. I don't have as many problems with plugins and any issues that I sometimes have in Cubase and other programs. It's very smooth. It's very easy. They finally fixed a lot of the things I hated about Ableton in the Live 8 update here, upgrade. They fixed a few things. Before, I really didn't like to do any audio editing in it. If I had to do editing, it was Cubase. You know, any meticulous editing and stuff, Ableton wasn't good at that. Now they finally, you know, fixed a couple of those problems. And they have a lot of good internal instruments and good gear. They have some good, some fun little tools in there. I use the auto pan thing a ton for sound design. You know, flip the phase to mono, you can get a good like almost gated stutter thing, and you can control that up, ramp that up, you know, and control that like you are with a waveform, and you can do a ton of cool things with that. The new Ableton has a new they finally put a limiter in, limiter compressor. It's not bad, and a lot of cool stuff. And there's two different ways of using it. I've used a lot of the sequencer format, you know, like you would use any normal sequencer, but there's this whole other, you know, the clip-based playing, and they just had this, it's called the APC-40, I believe, that just came out. It's this MIDI controller.
Right, from Akai.
Yeah, from Akai. And really interesting, especially for loop-based music and anything in the DJ and electronic world. It's a really interesting, you can have just this huge matrix of loops, you know, you can run them out to different channels, you can just trigger multiple loops at the same time, you can bounce between, you know, you can crossfade between the different channels. So many different, you know, way, it's sort of a different way of approaching music, and it's more of an instrument almost than, you know,
a live performance tool, yeah.
Yeah, it's a live performance tool. You can play it like an instrument. Everybody can play it differently. I don't know anyone who uses the software the same way. That's what I love about it, more so than, you know, of course, if you're going to do a big project, you know, a movie or your, you know, movie soundtrack, or you're doing a whole album or something, you want Pro Tools or Nuendo.
Well, but Ableton, I don't think of them in the same category, like yeah. Ableton and Pro Tools.
I think Ableton is
a creative tool. Yeah.
Although the version 8, boy, they're nipping at the heels. It's coming.
Everybody intrudes on everybody else's technologies, but the question is, who excels at it?
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather be – you're always limiting yourself if you say, I'm going to figure out a way to do this all in one box.
That's true.
There is still no single box that does everything.
Thank
great.
God.
You know what? I think that's the best thing too, is you're right. You can't – as much as I like Logic, I work Pro Tools 8 hours a day, and I could never do what I do in Pro Tools. I couldn't do 8 hours a day in Logic, you know. Yet at the same time, when I go to Logic, I can write really well, and for some reason it syncs with me. But I also like Ableton too, because that works also.
Well, you know, interesting thing.
I don't want to be without Pro Tools either, but yeah, I've been thinking about Ableton a lot.
What kind of music are you making?
You know, everything from corporate terms, new age, to metal, to electronica, ambient, that whole thing.
It's great for sketching out ideas. I mean, it's great for a lot of things. I mean, you can produce whole wonderfully sounding, you know, tracks on it. But it's,
yeah, you can't. It's not like a record producing. It's not like one of those where you're trying to do a whole.
You could. Is that what you're saying? I know plenty of people who have.
Okay.
You know, you can certainly produce, you know, great sounding records.
It sounds like I would really
especially
pop
in the electronic, you know, and it's great for, you know, working out ideas, sequencing stuff, working on your arrangement, bouncing things around. But about what you're saying. Made me think of Bruce Lee and his form of Kung Fu Jeet Kune Do, which he looked at all the different martial arts styles and took the best bits out of each style and combined them into one.
We call that Rob's house.
And I think that's how you have to approach. You don't just use one. You use different ones for different things, and you just take the best out of these and put them all together.
And the good thing is ultimately, you know what? The prices, they're coming down on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
when we used
really
to have
affordable.
To, we used to do those kinds of things, you know, okay, we need a Synclavier and a Fairlight and a Waveframe.
Yeah.
You know, when each toy was hundreds of thousands of dollars, right. It was just completely impossible.
Right.
Now you can truly, you know, for 10 grand, which is a lot of money, but not compared to what studios used to cost, for 10 grand, you can buy like every piece of software you've ever heard of
to
do music and see which ones you like.
Right.
But yeah, I'm a big believer in use each piece of software for what it's good for. Why should you be limiting your art just because a piece of software isn't well designed to do what you're thinking you're trying to do?
No, that's true too.
And you know, one of the things I was going to bring up before with plugins, the world of plugins, you know, we've got the LA-2A, the 1176 version, better than the other 24, 2560. LA-2As and 1176s. Everybody's modeling the classic gear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am so sick of that.
Oh, God, I'm so mad. It's getting to the point, like, we can't say it's an 1176, but it's that, you know, compressor.
Right.
Or it's a Poltec EQ. Or it's, I mean, everybody. It's like, what I'm kind of waiting now, and in the synth world, I love what Origin did.
I love the Origin.
I mean, the Origin, where they said, hey, we're going to take the oscillator model from this synth, and the filter from that synth, and the ring modulator from that synth, and build Frankenstein-type stuff. And I think that right now...
And you know what? It's expensive hardware, and it just feels so 80s to still be able to buy expensive hardware.
I have so many... I mean, I have tons and tons and tons of... You know, it takes me 2 days to turn Pro Tools on. And, you know, because it just has to go through all the plugins. And then, you know, I was going through it, and, you know, a couple of my guys go, yeah, but did you use them all? And I go, no. But I get them through massive packs, and I buy them through just different, you know, they come, you know, and they just, you
know. I mean, I feel sometimes like we should just march on the music industry just saying, we've got enough EQs and compressors. You know, all these plug-in companies, start coming up with something else.
Something new. It's like,
it's been a while.
Great, I've got the LA-2A, I've got the SSL, I've got the
20 flavors of each.
Something new.
I think you're right. I think there's definitely some room for innovation.
You know, there's nobody
innovation.
That has an Eventide. I mean, I love Eventide. They kind of had, you know, the pitch blender, the sound toys a little bit. But nobody's come out with a massive mangler.
Right.
You know, something that just takes it. Eventide, you can spin the wheel, close your eyes, hit load, and it'll be something really cool and interesting.
Well, because on an Orville or an 8000, you know, something expensive, Eventide, you can't run those algorithms on a, you know, on a TDM chip or something. Right. I mean, it takes a lot of hardware.
But there's nothing that really just, wow.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Well, Martin, you've been sitting there listening to us talk about all this digital stuff and software, and I was thinking as I was sitting here, you know, thinking about what I was going to say. But you know, one thing is you got to record it. You know, you got to acquire the sound from someplace. And
East meets West.
And there's nothing as refreshing as just real instruments through a real microphone.
And tell us a little bit about what's happening over at Sanken. You know, give us a little analog analog harmony.
What am I buying tonight?
Yeah, what's happening over at Sankin? I know you've been kind of quiet there, but
you may not remember or know that I also owned a company, SCKD, who fought hard into soft and hardware market
that's for
sure.
Years.
So
yes, Amplitude.
Yeah,
it was an amazing program.
And so it's really a totally different geek for me now to sell microphones where the innovative circles are like, I don't know, 1,000 times slower than in the plugin and software world that you were talking about. So there's really not that much new to report what's going on in the microphone world.
But you know what? That's okay.
let me blow your horn for a second.
Yeah.
Sankin has a mic because I've owned three Sankins right now. And one of them is a five-channel Sankin.
Right.
What it is, it's a mini shotgun size, and it does five-channel audio amazingly. And I've used it for crowds. I've used it for ambiences, gun shoots. I think it's a mic that most people don't know about and they should know more about.
What's the mic? What's the model?
It's the WMS5.
It's really good.
Yeah,
Sankin really. I mean, they're really on the cutting edge of developing microphones, mainly with NHK in Japan, which is the big broadcast organization there. And our best selling microphone right now in the studio world is the CO100K, our 100 kilohertz omnidirectional microphone.
Wow!
And basically, all Telarc uses them. All the classical Grammys that are won in the last few years, most of them have been recorded with the 100K microphone. So that's
definitely
something.
Can you take it on location? Can you take it on location?
Well, they use it for no, not on location.
Not if you want it to work the next day. Well, you know, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you know, it seems to me that when the economy is doing bad, that, you know, hardware is a good place, like analog, like microphones or mic pres and things like that are a good place to invest your money. Do you find, are people buying more or buying less or, you know, are you feeling the same dip that everybody else is or are people kind of trying to return home and buy, you know, good quality gear for,
Our customers are mainly sort of institutional customers, and that business seemed to have been fairly consistent.
Well, that's good.
So we have not been very
institutional.
Affected. Well, the big symphony orchestra halls, universities, and
churches.
Yeah. Some churches, and classical music seems to be on the rise actually in record sales. I think, or at least very stable.
I saw Beethoven has a new download on iTunes.
But he wants to charge for the preview. Well, that's great, though.
Of course, the microphone is an investment that they last 20, 30 years if you take care of them, and they stay pretty stable in price, at least the very high-end microphones.
You know, that's so true. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like going to a really high-end studio and looking at their mic locker and seeing microphones that are like 40, 50 years old and they're still in great condition. And, you know, I don't know. Maybe that's a geek in me, but I really –
It's a shrine. No, it is. We have all the mics from Signet and Radford. We still own all of them.
Wow.
And we've got them in a special – like. Specially place that we can't talk about, but you know, it's just vintage, and it doesn't matter how old. And a great mic collection is, you know, amazing.
It's priceless.
It is, and you know, I've told my wife. I said, okay, you know, God forbid something happens to me, this is not worth nothing. This is worth nothing. The mic collection worth something.
Uh-huh. And I think in the long run, I mean, what I sense very often is what you talked about, there is so subtle differences now between the different programs and the plugins, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of people enter the market from that side, but then they feel, how can I really improve my sound? And they very often then realize that investing in a microphone is a long-term investment in a very good microphone, and it really makes a difference that is audible or significant while getting just another compressor or plug-in
it's
a very subtle difference.
We definitely have full saturation with the number of workstations and plug-ins and instruments and all that stuff. And it's one of the reasons that so many people start to sound the same as each other.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, everybody thinks these tools are making it easier for them to be creative, but in a lot of ways it's not. In a lot of ways these tools are limiting people because everybody's using the same tools. And so, you know, if Ableton or somebody comes out with some new slicer, or think of what happened with Auto-Tune. You know, somebody comes out with a new process, and then all of a sudden everybody's using it. It doesn't free you. It just makes you more the same as everybody else.
That's true.
But good microphones, good analog front end, it really doesn't matter what workstation software you're using. It's about what you put into it.
No, and the transducer technology has gotten very cost effective, even on the high end. I mean, it's just all over the place. But you can get very interesting products very cheap and very amazing products that are very relatively cost effective.
Mm-hmm. But right. If you think where the industry can sort of like really evolve is in one sense through more surround systems, if that's going to happen in the cars, et cetera, down the road. So that will require new microphone technology, as you just said. And the other one is to expand the frequency range, right? I mean, go instead of downsizing to MP3 and lower sound quality.
Yeah.
I mean, eventually there will be a trend where we will push the quality of the audio.
One of the things for sound design, we're taking 100K microphones and, you know, recording at 192 manipulating pitch, and all of a sudden you get these amazing, when you drop it down in pitch, things that it doesn't sound like that typical, you know, lose all the high end, kind of gets muddy. Now it sort of takes another character. And while that's pretty common in sound design, sound effects, for music, when you want it, like you were talking, I want to create my own library of sounds, drums and rhythms. You go, I've never heard that before. It's what Peter Gabriel did the music when he first came out, and just really pushing it. Good microphone, good sample rates, you know, manipulating the product.
Well, it's pretty hilarious because it's the same stuff you and I were doing with the Waveframe in like 1988. It's fixed sample rate. I mean,
yeah.
Well, hey, listen, we're gonna have to wrap it up because
I wrap it up.
Told everybody we're not gonna go long today, and we are a little long.
We're a little long.
So what about the stimulus package?
About the what?
The audio stimulus package.
Yeah, keep holding your breath.
Yeah, that'll be in the next podcast. But, thank you, Martin, for joining us. And
you're welcome.
Coming out here.
Martin,
and Brandon, thank you for joining us
also.
Glad
to be here.
Giving us your little Ableton. Wait, Ableton.
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 You said Ableton.
But if you have any comments or questions for any of the guys or for the panel that we will eventually get back to you, you can get us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. And you can also check out our MySpace page as well as our Facebook page. Rob, you working on anything that you can talk about?
Yeah, kind of. We took a quick break from music to do some television mixing.
Oh.
I think I talked about that last time, but the schedules have gotten a little crazy, and just the short version of the story is in the last 4 days, we've delivered a one-hour episode from scratch each day.
Wow.
Including sound design and mix, ready for broadcast for a major network, and I am toast.
Wow.
But this was the big panic to get these 4 episodes out, and then the day after tomorrow we start on a really cool music project that I'm going to be able to talk about soon that I'm going to be playing keyboards all over, so I'm very
great.
Excited.
Great. Wow. Rob's playing.
Check this out. I'm playing with a live band, live singers, great band, like the dream band of the century. It's going to be really, really cool.
You know what? I'm just going to have to give Rob a plug. He's a great, great keyboard player. Rob is a fantastic keyboard player.
And the cool part is, whether that's true or not, I'm the only one there to play keys on this thing, so it doesn't matter.
No, it is true.
It doesn't matter.
It is true. Listen, you're the only guy I know who could sit down when we were touring with Stevie Wonder and play Stevie's parts, like, perfectly.
Wow.
So
if I wanted a hotel room at night, parties. I had to do it.
Forrest, you working on anything?
Nothing really new to report, but just trying to work on these tracks for this documentary.
Great.
Stuntman documentary. I still don't know what it is. Whatever it is. Good. Well, I'm happy with it, so I feel good about it.
Great. And you know you're not buying Logic because Rob just talked
about it. No, I'm saying buy Logic. Forrest and I are going to have a longer sit-down conversation.
Forrest is going to be sprinting as soon as
No.
Just kidding. No, we'll have a sit-down.
I want to help. Lord. I'm here to help.
He is here to help.
I'm sure of it.
Rob's a good person.
I'm here to help.
I'm quite sure.
Scott, what about you?
Hello!
Help me, Scott!
Hello!
I'm crazy right now.
That's true.
I am. That's why I'm pretty animated right now. I'm stupidly busy. Half the stuff I can't even talk about what I'm doing. But what I think I can, I've just started Nightmare on Elm Street, which is being produced by Michael Bay. So I'm going to spend time over his place.
Michael Bay, Nightmare on Elm Street?
Yeah. And it's
why do I see, like, an aircraft carrier coming down the street?
And it's actually it's interesting because it's with Warner Brothers New Line and Platinum Dunes, who did a lot of that stuff.
How tall is Freddy Krueger? Is he going to be, like, 1,000 feet tall?
Oh, it's about, like, what's his name? Like, Michael Myers.
I'm doing a bunch of stuff with Guillermo del Toro. And,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so we're doing a bunch of stuff together. And the video game side, can't say the projects, but we have 6 games in-house right now.
Wow.
So my little circle of my world is we're just not seeing a lot of daylight.
Wow. You
know? We don't even know the change of the seasons at this point.
Wow. You got it.
No complaints.
Take them while you can.
Absolutely.
No, that's right.
Brandon, what about you? I know you did...
a lot of cool stuff going on.
Let's see. Whiteout, right? Did you do some of the cuts for Whiteout?
Yeah, that wasn't one of the cool...
No, but the trailer. The trailer's cool.
Got a lot of sound effects in there. That
I was talking
cool.
about the music, the trailers.
That one. Cool stuff going on right now. Got Avatar going on. Got Alice in Wonderland. Cool. Got Sherlock Holmes. So a couple of small films.
Yeah, man.
Avatar's been a lot of fun.
That's cool.
A lot of cool stuff going on.
So has Jim been there wanting to approve everything?
Well, no, we had to send an editor to him for a while. And now we're just working on TV stuff in-house.
It's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. That's amazing.
It's going to be cool. It's going to be cool.
Great.
Sounds exciting.
Who's doing the sound for that? Do you know?
I do. But it's being done in New Zealand.
Gene Simmons.
Oh, wow. All right, well, that's cool. So it sounds like you have your play
for. A lot of fun stuff going on.
Well, that's great.
I just want to say my favorite new plug-in or virtual instrument, Storm Drum from East West. Fantastic. Storm Drum, has anyone?
One or two?
Two, pro.
Two. Two pro. Two rock. Actually, they both rock. The problem with one is everybody used it to death, and then everything started to sound the same. But two is still relatively new enough that hasn't happened.
I never had one, so.
It's good stuff, though.
Two is awesome. I'm loving it.
Yeah, it's really good.
Very, very cool.
And as soon as the podcast is over, I'll tell you something else about Storm Drum.
I'm just laughing because you cannot mention a plug-in without
knowing it already.
No, but I like Storm Drum. I'll tell you if I think it sucks.
I know, but that's so funny. One or two. Yeah. Was it the left-handed version or the right-handed version? Because I've got both.
Definitely the left-handed version.
Which build is that?
Yeah.
That's 2 points.
Oh, 2 points.
No, actually, I think it's great, man, because Rob's a great resource. And, you know, like I said, Forrest, you should talk to him.
Oh, Lord, I think he's going to talk to me.
No.
I'm just kidding.
I'm here to
I'm
help.
Looking forward to it.
Well, I just want to plug, I'm going to be over at the at AES in New York. So if anybody, this show will be posted before then. So if anybody wants to come in and say
Are you going to
Tech
Awards?
I don't think I'm going to the Tech Awards.
I got 2 nominations.
Did you really?
I do.
Well, are you going?
No.
Really? So then if you win, can I go up there
sure.
and say I'm accepting this award on behalf of Scott Gershon?
I got nominated for Hellboy 2 and Gears of War 2.
Oh, that's cool.
Yay.
So, yeah.
Well, good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going. Is that when's that? Is that the Saturday? Because there's a big API 40th anniversary party that I'm going to be going to. I'm actually directing the video that's going to kick off the whole thing, so that'll be kind of fun.
Nice.
Been working on that, cutting that down.
And Sankin will be there as
well. Yeah, Sankin will be there.
Yay.
There you go.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to come to the API party?
Absolutely.
Talk to me. We'll get you in. All right. Well, hey, if you have any questions or comments, you can always email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. For myself and the rest of the guys, first of all, we've got to give a shout out to Bobby because he's
Hello,
not here.
Bobby!
He's not feeling well.
Oh, no, he's not.
He was not feeling well.
He should be back next time.
Yeah, he'll be back. And I know Martin's in the middle. He's still writing. I actually got an email from him. I talked to him, and he's writing. He's working on his music, and I know Andrew's out. He's working.
He's mixing a project.
He
does send his regrets. He would love to get back here.
Yep. But you know what? What's going to be cool is when he comes back, because he's probably working on something really cool. Mm. So he'll tell us all about it. All right. Well, for myself and the rest of the guys, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks
for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by AFEX and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbitier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaulo and uses AFEX's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.